KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
SoMa.
I'm from Berkeley.
Concord, Cali.
Tenderloin District.
La Mission.
Coming up, the city of Oakland is building tiny homes to shelter people living in the city's growing sidewalk encampments.
Basically, it would give me peace of mind, a cabin. Would give me peace of mind so I can focus.
We'll hear how encampments are cleared, but also how everyone does not get a tiny home.
How do you evict people who don't have houses? The people in government, they don't see the humanity.
And we'll hear how a grassroots group is trying to work with the city to house the people left behind.
I think if we had been less antagonistic, we wouldn't have come as far as we have. We wouldn't even have the tough sheds. The idea of creating a solution would have never happened.
Developing housing alternatives in the face of a crisis, today on Cross Currents. The Bay Area's housing crisis keeps getting worse. As it does, rates of homelessness have climbed. It surged by 40% in Alameda County over just the past 2 years. In Oakland, this has meant an explosion of tent encampments, and those have forced city officials into a difficult choice. They can tolerate the camps, which can be vulnerable to crime and disease, or they can clear them away. Lately, though, there's been a new approach, replacing some encampments with communities of tiny wooden sheds. Some of these facilities include sanitation, security, and on-site social workers. One of the problems, though, is that they serve just a fraction of the nearly 2,000 people sleeping outside in Oakland every night, and they come at the cost of clearing existing encampments nearby. When the city began its latest project in April, unsheltered residents next door wondered if they'd be invited in to live in the city-sanctioned sheds, or forced to move on. Reporter Charlie Mintz went to find out.
Before the city cleared the tents and power washed the sidewalks, the encampment at 27th and Northgate in West Oakland stretched for blocks. Tents and makeshift tarp shelters crowded together amidst bike frames, shopping carts, and other rubbish spilling into the street. At the center of it all, in a plywood shack, lived Marcus Emery.
Better known as the mayor and the bishop, I kind of oversee everything in our community, and the bishop, as far as gospel, I try to put the word out.
I met Emery near the donation tables. He was helping make sure everyone got their share of some toiletries that had been donated. One of nearly 100 people living at the site, Emery told me he'd been here about 2 years since being evicted from his Oakland apartment.
I got with a female that was heavily on drugs. And instead of me paying my rent, I paid her drug bill. The landlord gave me chance after chance after chance. I didn't do it. I looked up, I had an eviction notice.
At first, he slept on a couch in the street outside his old apartment. Then his nephew, who was already living at 27th and Northgate, invited Emery to join him.
And I've been with him ever since, man. It still hurts. It still hurts.
Emery's nephew is Sean Moses.
Born and raised in Oakland, ex-executive manager that lost his job in 2001 due to that stock market crash. Been homeless on and off ever since then.
Moses lived next door to his uncle in an identical 8x8 wooden cabin built by a Good Samaritan some years back.
I've been here about 5 years. I've been here the longest, basically. This street was all clear. It was a long time.
As the most veteran resident, Moses served as a spokesperson and advocate for safety at the community. Over those 5 years, he says he'd lost a friend to a hit-and-run accident and another to a tent fire that he suspected was homicide.
He hadn't even had his tent a month, you know, and he spent all day help building his. He was like the last one to get one. And he died inside of it, you know. It wasn't nice. Yeah, it was terrible.
Even beyond the perils of violence and speeding cars, living outside is extremely dangerous. Communicable diseases spread more easily, and healthcare is hard to come by. One study looking at cities around the world found that the average lifespan for a homeless person is just 50 years.
I count one homeless person die a month just in this area. A month, and it's been happening. I've been here for 5 years. You know how many? That's a lot of people.
Oakland doesn't track the number of unhoused persons who die each year, but no one doubts the need for a better approach. Many advocates and researchers support a philosophy known as Housing First, which prioritizes housing as the first response to homelessness. They argue that permanent shelter is the foundation for making other changes like finding employment or managing substance dependency. But of the more than $18 million Oakland spends annually on homelessness, less than 10% goes towards housing first programs. As a result, most of Oakland's housing insecure residents have to find space in the city's dwindling supply of single room occupancy hotels, at overbooked shelters, or too often on the streets.
They have to find a better solution. And right now, Lord knows I don't have the solution. But there has to be a solution to this problem here.
One emerging possibility, sheds, tough sheds, about $3,000 off the shelf at Home Depot. The wood and steel structures measure 10 by 12 feet. They're green with white trim, a set of windows, and a squat triangular roof. In late April, the city installed 20 of them in a parking lot by the 27th and Northgate encampment. Officials promised that individuals living there would have access to electricity, bathrooms, a kitchen, a small dog park, and a mobile shower service. Residents could only stay for 6 months to a year, but the city was offering something else, an on-site social worker to help them get permanent housing.
Basically, it would give me peace of mind. It would give me peace of mind to where I can map out a plan, the way to go from here. Just to map out a plan. Yeah, I can leave here right now and go to Louisiana, but I would be leaving 54 years here. My mom, my family, and everyone. That would give me peace of mind. The cabin would give me peace of mind so I can focus.
But only 40 residents from the encampment would be able to move into the sheds. Everyone else, about 60 people, would have to gather up their belongings and move on. In late April, Emery and Moses were unsure if they'd be among the lucky few.
I don't know the pecking order, but I pray to the Lord that I'm one of them.
I wanted to learn who would get chosen and how the city would choose. So I went to City Hall and spoke with Assistant to the City Administrator, Joe DeVries.
The tough shed model was a way to immediately address a large encampment.
DeVries explained that the policy grew out of Oakland's efforts to find a new approach to the city's nearly 200 homeless encampments. The city had tried just clearing them away, but that didn't accomplish anything.
What we found was we'd spent a lot of money, a lot of resources, closing an encampment down and literally just pushing the problem a block down the street.
In 2016, the city began experimenting with a different strategy, sanctioning certain encampments, starting with a site in West Oakland.
We did allow people to be in a certain area. We provided porta potties and wash stations. We also provided a full-time case manager.
Instead of removing residents, the city would help them where they were. Only one site received a social worker, but others got porta potties, hand wash stations, and trash cleanup. Flash forward 2 years to today, and a total of 14 sites are overseen in this fashion. The city now has its own encampment management team that meets regularly. Other cities like Seattle and Portland have found success with similar policies. And DeVries said the model is working in Oakland, too.
And so what we learned from that was if we provide some basic services and case management, we can navigate people to housing faster.
Then, in December 2017, with $650,000 in funds from the county and other donations, the city embarked on its first experiment with tough sheds. The site chosen was a large homeless encampment near downtown Oakland at 6th and Brush Streets. Public Works employees cleared the camp. 40 residents were moved into 20 sheds at the new site and given access to bathrooms and showers, meals, and a social worker. I asked DeVries how the city decides who gets this opportunity.
The first group of people will be the people that we have documentation that were living there the longest. After that, everyone else will be ranked using the coordinated entry model that the county now uses, which ranks people based on need.
Factors the model considers include the presence of a chronic health condition, mental illness, substance dependency, age, and length of time living outside. Anyone who didn't make the cut would have to move on.
To be fair, we will not get everyone housed in the area. Since we first started doing a census in that area, the unsheltered population has ballooned to close to 100 people. We only have room for 40 at a time. And so it's going to be tricky to figure out how to manage and close the encampments surrounding the facility.
So where will those other 60 people go? There aren't many options. A long wait list confronts any applicant to one of Oakland's transitional housing facilities. The city has offered beds at the St. Vincent de Paul Homeless Shelter, but many 27th and Northgate residents aren't interested. Shelters have restrictive rules about coming and going. Living outside, for all its hardships, offers more freedom. So, as residents learned that the city was clearing the encampment, many said their plan was to just move on to a different one. Early in May, word spread around the 27th and Northgate encampment that the city was clearing it to prepare for the move to the tough sheds. In response, activists planned a protest. The morning of the clearance, about 50 people showed up with coffee, pastries, and bottled water.
Basically, what we heard from the people is that they're going to be evicting this house's camp.
An organizer named Blake, with a group called People's Breakfast Oakland, said he and the others were there to keep an eye on the police and support the residents of the camp who were being displaced.
How do you evict people who don't have houses? You feel me? Like, how do you, the people in government, they don't see the humanity of people.
In the end, the city decided only one block would be cleared that day. More would be done gradually throughout the month. Cops would wake residents up and tell them they had to move on. Sanitation workers would remove tents and dump trash into garbage trucks. Power washers would sweep away the last traces that anyone had ever lived there. As the clearances continued, Marcus Emery and Sean Moses waited to learn their fate. I wondered, what would it mean if they did get a spot? Was living in the sheds better than living on the street? Would it help them find permanent housing? I visited the city's first tough shed site at 6th and Brush Streets to find out.
So I can see, I can have some of my community if they'll come out and talk to you.
That'd be wonderful. I totally understand. Thank you so much.
The intersection of 6th and Brush Street is in an out-of-the-way corner of Oakland, close to the 880 freeway. It's a dirt lot, enclosed by a barbed wire fence, that hosts 20 blue and red sheds. On a recent weekday afternoon, a security guard sat at a shaded table, checking residents in and out. A young woman named Kristen volunteered to talk with me outside the gates.
I've been on the streets for 5 years, and I've been in the sheds since January.
Kristen says the on-site social worker has tried to move her into a transitional facility called Henry Robinson, but she hasn't gone because her boyfriend, currently in jail, wouldn't be allowed to go with her.
I've been with him for 11 years. I mean, I'm not going to not live with my dude, so I can't live in the Henry.
But just living in the sheds, she says, does feel better than in an encampment.
When I was in a tent, it sucked. Like, it's a lot better in the sheds. Like, when it rains, you have a roof over your head. You know what I mean? You get fed every morning. And you get dinner every night. So a lot of people are more healthy now.
Health is important, but the real goal is permanent housing. And that's been trickier. The city claims 8 individuals have moved on from this tough shed community to transitional housing. But critics point out that 2 of the 8 individuals who've left are already back on the street. A few days later, I was back at 27th and Northgate, and Emery had some good news.
I got my key today. Over there.
How's that feel?
A relief. A relief from this anxiety. A relief.
His nephew, Sean Moses, had received a spot in the sheds, too.
Where he go, I go. Where I go, he go.
In early May, their tough shed community was still mostly empty. The city was moving in just a few people at a time, giving new residents a chance to get settled. Volunteers hammered and sawed as Emery reflected on the change.
It's a good thing, but a lot more can be done. But you know, like Confucius say, a journey of 10,000 miles began with one step, and we're taking our first step.
At the intersection of 27th and Northgate in Oakland, I'm Charlie Mintz for Cross Currents.
Listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. Before Oakland's Tough Sheds or Community Cabins program, there was a grassroots effort to provide tiny homes for unsheltered people in the city. A group called The Village has been working on the idea since 2016. First, it was against the city's rules, then later with the city's permission on city-owned land. But now the fledgling tiny home community will be disbanded. The freeway overpass on the site is due for rehabilitation, so Village members have to clear out of the area. Activists say this blow to their progress proves that the city is not serious about seeing the project succeed. KALW's Liza Veal has that story.
Here's a recap of how The Village got to the site it'll soon have to leave. Early last year, activists took over a park in northwest Oakland and began constructing tiny homes and communal facilities for about 10 people illegally. That lasted until... an early morning face-off in February of 2017, when the city cleared The Village.
Cops are going around the side, let's go!
Go, go, go!
And the protesters defending it away.
The park is closed!
The Village was disbanded, but the city heard the activists' pitch. They wanted to create a sober, self-governed community that would make it possible for homeless people to get things together and transition into permanent housing.
And just because they're tearing it down doesn't mean that it's not going to go up somewhere else.
That's right!
After the city council expressed support for The Village, Mayor Libby Schaff's administration agreed to begin working with the activists to find a new site through official channels, which it finally did at the beginning of this year.
Good morning.
The Village is settled for now on a site they call the Promised Land because it was promised to them by the city. It's a wide dirt lot near Fruitvale in East Oakland. It's surrounded by a freeway and BART line overhead. Today there's kebabs cooking on a barbecue, a swing hanging down from the overpass, a cluster of tents, and mounds of discarded junk and materials. And then there's the construction zone. About 10 volunteers are working on building two new tiny homes. Three have already been completed. Jorge Cabrero has lived in the neighborhood all his life and says he's been looking for a way to help people on the streets get into homes.
Well, the first time I came, I was riding on my bike, and I seen them building, and I asked them if they wanted some volunteers. They said yes, so I started volunteering.
This is Cabrero's third time here. He's part of a shifting cast of people donating time, materials, and expertise to this project.
Never mind, I'd rather do this than do nothing at home.
There's also a small contingent of high school students here today.
You just are volunteering out of the kindness of your own heart?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Ahmed Hajaji says it feels good to be useful and also...
You look good in college application too.
They're cutting and installing insulation with instruction from James Moore. Moore is on the list to get into one of these homes. He's homeless and...
You're a carpenter?
Yeah, I'm a carpenter.
You are a carpenter.
Moore is a little hard to understand right now because he's missing his dentures. He went to Laney College for carpentry, grew up down the street right here on 23rd Avenue, and he's a Vietnam War veteran.
Yes, I have PTSD, but I got more PTSD on 23rd Avenue than I did in military.
He says he has more PTSD from 23rd Avenue than he does from the military.
I see more fighting and killing on 23rd Avenue than I did in the military.
Saw more fighting and killing there too than he did in the war, he adds. Moore is hoping to get into one of these tiny homes and get a little peace of mind for the first time in a while.
Because I have a lock on both doors.
Right.
And people can't get in, come in and mess with you.
But everyone here, the nearly 100 people camping, has been told to clear out. And there isn't a new city-sanctioned site for them to go to. Nita B., the lead organizer with The Village, sees things this way. The eviction of The Village is just the latest in a long series of attempts by Mayor Schaff's administration to sabotage the project.
Despite city council clearly getting behind this move that The Village and the people of Oakland want, they still are not working with us.
Nita B. says there have been too many hoops to jump through. First, the administration required The Village to become a nonprofit or get a fiscal sponsor, which took a while. Then the city told them they needed $2 million liability insurance.
No insurance company will mess with us.
Then they offered up a less than ideal plot of land and, she says, immediately directed homeless people to it. More people than The Village could possibly deal with.
If you are offered land to do what you're going to do, And then I offer you the land, and then I go and hurt a bunch of people on that land, but I don't bother to tell you that I'm gonna do that. And you show up 2 days later and the land is completely filled with six encampments from five different neighborhoods, two rival gangs, and then you're expected to deal with that.
Now that there's chaos at the site, she says the city blames them for it and says it proves they're not equipped or trained to do the work they're doing.
And then a month later, they're like, oh, you know what? We didn't realize. Oops. We're gonna have to take the land back. And we're like, oh, well, then you didn't do your job.
Which was to vet the land before offering it. In other words, Nita B says the village is being set up to fail.
Why do you think they don't want you to succeed?
I think it's pettiness on one level. I think they still have their feelings hurt. They didn't like that we said we are ungovernable by you. They're still pissed off.
She's referring to last year when the city shut down the village after the activists refused to vacate the private land. But Nita B doesn't regret being hostile and uncooperative.
I think if we had been less antagonistic, we wouldn't have come as far as we have. We wouldn't even have the tough sheds. The idea of creating a solution would have never happened.
She's saying pressure from activists like her forced the city to take action in the form of the Tough Sheds project, which is the same basic idea as the village. Even though the village intends to use little to no city resources other than the vacant land, and the city's Tough Sheds project has a $550,000 budget. Still,
if anything, we've kicked down a door, we've held it open, we have people talking about this.
The assistant to the city administrator, Joe DeVries, told me when the activists badmouth the administration, it makes it harder for him to root for them. But he claims it doesn't make him do his job any differently. He predicts the village will happen soon.
Yeah, I think it will. I think what we need to do is find a piece of land that will work for them for what they want to do and then move into contract and help them move 40 people over to that parcel from the East 12th site because they can't be there any longer.
DeVries says the upcoming construction is not something they could have anticipated. As for the idea that the administration drew chaos to the site,
Nita with the village claims that the city herded people there and that we encouraged people to move there. Other than that like dozen people, that's not true. We didn't.
The East 12th site is not enclosed or locked, and it's sanctioned by the city. So it's no wonder people are taking refuge there. There have been fires and fights and at least one incident of sexual assault already. Though it's not a pure reflection on the village's operations, it doesn't look good.
I think the biggest concern is that there's some sort of site management going on that has rules that people have to follow to avoid serious physical injury for people.
While Nita B agrees in theory, the village and the city have trouble ironing out the rules. The grassroots community is self-governed and anti-authoritarian. So for example, they do their own security by taking shifts, not by hiring guards. The contract negotiations also snag on another issue. How will the village get people into permanent housing? The city says residents shouldn't be allowed to stay for up to 2 years, as the village has proposed.
Otherwise, what happens is people just get comfortable. They go, oh, well, I live here now, and I'm going to be able to live here as long as I want. And that's not the case. The goal isn't to have people living in wooden boxes forever. It's to get people on a path to real housing.
Nita B says, of course, the plan is to help people get into homes. But she says the timeline is unrealistic because there just isn't enough housing available, no matter how many case managers you hire.
I'm going to go ahead and call on Councilmember Kaplan. You're first.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you to everyone who came out to speak tonight.
City Council Member Rebecca Kaplan has been one of the strongest supporters of the village.
I want to make clear the magnitude of the problem we are responding to. We have about 3,000 unhoused people in our city right now.
The village isn't the only group asking the city to suspend or change the rules around shelter in this time of growing homelessness. There are faith-based organizations trying to house people. There are individuals lobbying to be allowed to live in RVs and shipping containers. Kaplan's pushing the city to make those alternatives easier. For example, by folding sites into the city's own liability insurance instead of requiring groups to get their own.
In the North Bay, when they suffered a devastating fire a few months ago, they lost about 3,000 housing units in one night. And within weeks, they passed a law making it easier to have legally allowed housing units, be RVs, be travel trailers. Our emergency is no less serious than theirs and warrants no less of a response.
the housing emergency is also not likely to be temporary. As grassroots groups and homeless people keep working on developing alternatives, the city will continue wrestling with its role in managing them. In Oakland, I'm Liza Veal for Cross Currents.
Liza is our housing and homelessness reporter. If you got a story idea or feedback for her, give her a shout. You can reach her at housing@kalw.org. Today's Cross Currents team includes Muna Danish, Nina Gensler-Debs, Nicholas Harder, Angela Johnston, Kristen McCandless, Truk Nguyen, Celine Ross, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are Gabe Graben and James Rollins. Jen Sheehan is our managing editor. And today, we sadly say farewell to some members of our team. Our editors, Raquel Maria Dillon and Andrew Stelzer, sound engineer Jackie Sajiko, and our line producer, Hannah Kingsley Ma. We're going to miss you all very, very much, but you'll always be part of our team. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.